huge spike is going to be when the world wakes up psychologically that one Bitcoin is 100 million satoshis, and now it's very affordable for everyone. And when people start to recognize they're buying fractions of a Bitcoin is easy through, say, Robinhood, Tether, $135 billion, and they make more money than BlackRock with $11 trillion. They're doing $100 million in revenue per employee. Like, no other company in the world does that.
Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, Frank Holmes, CEO of Hive, one of the leaders in the Bitcoin mining space. But Frank, we've got a lot of commotion coming across this Bitcoin mining space. We've got the IMF coming at El Salvador saying, hey, no more buying Bitcoin and no more Bitcoin mining. But on the flip side of things, we had President Trump just sign an executive order yesterday saying that we're going to move all of the confiscated Bitcoin into a strategic reserve. Now, with this, as a member of the Bitcoin mining community, one of the leaders, how are you viewing this? Is this going to be the start of a potential Bitcoin hash war?
I think it's just part of that whole adoption process. And what listeners have to appreciate, and most people in technology love to use Moore's Law. And Moore's Law is important for chip design. And when you look at what's happening in Bitcoin and Bitcoin prices, is Metcalfe's law. And Metcalfe's law is about adoption and a network and how big, and if there's boundaries around a network or caps, like there is on Bitcoin of 21 million coins. This is really critical in the next stage of adoption, which makes Bitcoin worth $1 million. And when I try to explain this, and I was really interested in this, Brandon, I was talking to a whole group of registered investment advisors, and they didn't know what a Satoshi was, but they all got Bitcoin buying the Bitcoin ETFs. And I said, well, one Bitcoin's worth 100 million Satoshis, and if you go and buy $10,000 worth of Bitcoin, say it's just HODL, which is VanEck ETF for owning Bitcoin, you're actually buying Satoshis, and you're probably buying about 10 million Satoshis. So you're buying a penny stock at 0.0008 cents, but at one penny, Bitcoin's worth a million. They had no idea.
Do you think that nobody's really getting Bitcoin at this point because of the ETFs? Because it's just, hey, like, almost have that whole number bias where people don't understand, hey, you know, you could buy a dollar's worth, but, you know, the ETFs are a couple $100 depending on, you know, what they're being priced at. Do you think that there's that big learning curve for people?
Big learning curve and big opportunity. So what does that mean? It means adoption. And what does adoption mean? Well, whenever you have the adoption where there's a limited supply, then the price of that coin, Bitcoin, grows exponentially. And it doesn't happen all in one day. It doesn't happen in 1 week or 1 year, but it has a sort of waving function. And you can see that especially, Brendan, in art. When you take a look at art, like, so behind me is a sculpture by a famous Chinese artist 25 years ago. And with that box and that piece of a T-Rex was a political statement that China wants to eat the world. This is 25 years ago. But that box and that sculpture was worth $1,000. Well, now the box is worth more than what I paid for the sculpture, and the sculpture is worth 15x. So why is that? Well, this thing, because there's a limited supply of $1,000 and $1,000. The artist has become famous, and then more people say, I want a piece of that. And I protected it in because of the box valuation. But what's really interesting with Bitcoin is so much like a Picasso piece of art. If you look at Andy Warhol, when he first came out with 1,000 prints of Marilyn Monroe at $1,000, they went to a quarter million. You have the most famous one in Asia is Mao. What happened to Mao? And then Mao came down because of anti-China. But it went from $1,000 to $150,000. That's a huge lift. So it's just recognizing that when you limit a supply, Bitcoin's at 21 million coins, the adoption is growing, then the price of the Bitcoin will go exponentially. And what most people are going to be buying are Satoshis. And that's what I try to explain to other investors. You can go buy a HODL ETF, and for your $1,000, you got 1 million Satoshis. And when they hit a penny, that means your Bitcoin's going to be worth $1 million, your fraction. So you've got a 10X on your money. You have to think that way with the Satoshis.
Now, with that, are you saying that we're going to start to reach that exponential curve with the Bitcoin price action because the adoption we're seeing, rise significantly? So are we going to get to that Parker Lewis famous quote there, gradually, then suddenly? Are we slowly reaching that suddenly part?
No, I don't think this suddenly happens until we hit 1 million. It's just going to be these waves, and the real huge spike is going to be when the world wakes up that one Bitcoin is 100 million Satoshis, and now it's very affordable for everyone. This is a very common thing in capital markets. Psychologically, Warren Buffett even created another stock that was convertible into his other stock, but it was a cheaper price. So it creates that adoption. And when people start to recognize they're buying fractions of a Bitcoin, is easy through, say, Robinhood. It's really easy to go buy one of these ETFs. And there's no commissions, but you're playing as Satoshis.
Now, yeah, I agree with you there. I think that we're running into a whole number bias. But, what do you think we reach that, million a coin? Because, we're only 10X away, which, Bitcoin does 10Xs, pretty frequently. Do you think that we reach it maybe this cycle or next cycle? Or are we still a far ways away? Because it seems like with this adoption, with the strategic reserve coming in, that, things could start to take off here pretty quickly.
I think in this cycle, before the next halving, it has a high, high probability of being going to $1 million. And what happened to us at Hive was, or in our coins, was the breakout of ordinals. And ordinals was the technology of attaching a piece of art, a JPEG, to a Satoshi. Satoshi is so inexpensive, but we found out that if you have certain special numbers on a certain date, such as Trump's inauguration date, the Bitcoins will become more valuable. And therefore, certain Satoshis just at that moment can become more valuable, that we were offered for our Satoshis, like I mentioned earlier, 0.0008 cents, all of a sudden we were offered $10 per Satoshi because we had those unique numbers. That wake-up call was not a penny for a Satoshi that makes Bitcoin worth $1 million, but $10 for a Satoshi.
So yeah, I think that's the game changer right there, right? But do you think that we're going to continue down that path of, different Satoshis being worth different amounts? Or do you think, eventually this ordinals thing will kind of fall to the wayside where we'll be, one Satoshi equals, $1 or something else. And, when we're transacting and things like that, it'll almost get to a point where people don't even realize they're using Bitcoin. Like half the time, I think people don't even realize what kind of money they're using. They just use Apple Pay or things like that.
Correct. Think about it though. If you have something that's worth much less than a penny today, and someone's offering you $10 for certain numbers, that means that throughout this wave, that these are all undervalued.
If
people are trying to buy things at discounts, or this coin and this Satoshi is not so valuable as this one on the negative side. No, this is on the positive side. This says it's going to pull in that direction, just like it's happened in art. And it happened in diamonds. Diamonds were the same thing with the adoption of diamonds. Only 3% of Americans expected a diamond or had to go get a diamond to get married after World War II. And the adoption of diamonds validating love, which is an intangible, with something tangible, a diamond, all of a sudden grew to 80%, 85% of people expect a diamond to give or get for the commitment of marriage. And De Beers did this marketing program of awareness all over again in Japan, which was 3%. They started this in the 60s, and it's now over 80%. Then you had supply coming out of Russia, and everything is distorted, and then they had synthetic diamonds. But the value of a carat of diamond went up a hundredfold since 1945. So it's recognizing, and what De Beers had done at that time was limit supply of high quality diamonds, and the adoption took place, took it up that level. Well, this is different because it's capped at 21 million by the algorithm. It's the most incredible symphony. It's like Mozart's 21st symphony. It's spectacular. What the whole concept of Bitcoin.
So you're basically saying that, I guess, that the tide lifts all boats then, in a sense, right? So if a Satoshi, because the ordinals was, essentially valued at $10 a Satoshi, eventually all the other ones will catch up to that. Am I catching your drift
all
there?
All ships rise with a rising tide. And it's telling you there's no negatives really with that model. There's no downdrafts that I see except for regulatory sentiment. We can see how a hack takes place and how quickly Bitcoin gets all bids gets canceled. I think we're going to see AI is being used because Bitcoin trades 24/7. I think a lot of people don't realize that there's 195 countries in the world, but there's over 20,000 nodes validating the Bitcoin decentralized system all over the world. And a lot of those systems are also using AI to track news 24/7. And about every 10 minutes, it's a jump ball to see who's going to win the validation of a transaction in the Bitcoin ecosystem to earn a new Bitcoin. And that mechanism and the use of AI shows you that on a Sunday night, things can happen. It can, in North America, when things all of a sudden can be exploding in Asia. Or they can all of a sudden bids get canceled. It's a much more fluid, dynamic world, and it's very decentralized, not controlled by one government. And that's what's really key.
Now, that is very interesting here that you're lining out, because it sounds like, you know, we're going to start to see this almost, you know, I mean, as you're saying, the nodes are decentralized, right? We have other governments starting to develop some sort of Bitcoin policy, right? David Bailey's been tweeting out like crazy lately, saying that, you know, because of this executive order that Trump signed yesterday, that we're going to see essentially nation state FOMO. So with that, do you think that there's always going to be, I guess, positive things going forward for regulatory issues or potential, you know, FUD that we have in regulatory space? Does this executive order that was just signed, I guess, give you more confidence in the Bitcoin space going forward?
Yes, and I think all these things that they get done in the first 2 years of Trump's presidency, because of his tariff battles and et cetera, do not ignite inflation. They actually improve the overall economic activity, then he will still have control of Senate and Congress. But odds favor that his policies don't work out, that he will lose control of Senate and Congress. So now he has to push through this stuff. And once it's in traction, then I think it just keeps going. The great concern has been the bank lobbying groups by the Bank of International Settlements. They're incredibly influential, even from the gold market when gold moved around the world as collateral against paper money by countries, and central banks are functioning with the Bank of International Settlements. They've been very much anti-Bitcoin because they want to have this central control, and the big money center banks in New York City, in London, in Germany, it's the same thing. They all want to control the Bitcoin ecosystem. And I think that we're going to have different policies and rules around the world. I hope that something comes in on taxation, that there's no taxation on the innovation of layer two. That concept, there's no taxation on Bitcoin. This will bring in what President Clinton did in the 90s, because the banks would basically have stopped the innovation that created PayPal that made Elon Musk very rich at the beginning. It's seeing those pivot moves that take place. And Venmo, we saw this technology evolve in Africa, where a telecom all of a sudden has the ability to move money, and they bank the unbankable. No banks would open for these poor people in villages a banking account for them. And all of a sudden now they had a cell phone. They could move money around back and forth. And in today, it's 10% of the GDP of Kenya. It's incredible. And that only came out a few years before Bitcoin was released, how fast and significant. So I think that Bitcoin has we don't know directly, but it has that ability to all of a sudden actually add to the global GDP, in particular, the blockchain. The adoption of blockchain will make governments much more accountable on these agencies. When you have to go do an audit and you have to go and look through where all money went, like USAID does phenomenally wonderful jobs around the world, but it was being abused. It was being used politically, not for America as a whole. It was being used for a political party agenda. That's a mistake. Then if all that stuff was on the blockchain, it would have been easy to identify and audit. I think that more countries are going to go with the blockchain adoption because of the success of Bitcoin. I think that many positive things will happen, especially if you limit any type of taxation, and all the scientists, the coders, et cetera, are allowed to go and use their brain cells to create new ideas. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, so I got a tough question for you then to follow up here. Do you think that there's any, because you listed PayPal, you listed a bunch of other, I guess, technologies. Do you think there's any technology that you've seen in history that's been as significant as Bitcoin?
Well, I think that Bitcoin is a key spoke in the digital gig economy. When you look at the great digital transformation we're all going through, one of the most significant parts was a payment system that was decentralized. And I think that that's what it's key for. But you gotta remember, my understanding of this journey, remember, I'm a money manager, and I have the ETFs like Jets ETF and GoAU, listed in the New York Stock Exchange. And I was trying to launch a Bitcoin ETF in 2017 and realized that the fears and the pushback by regulators over AML and KYC concerns at that time were preventing me moving forward with a Bitcoin ETF. But when you start a crypto mining company, guess what? You're validating, you're getting a virgin coin. You don't have a KYC, you don't have an AML problem. Therefore, I can mine and stack as many coins on my balance sheet as possible. So Hive was the first crypto mining company to go public, and it went public in Canada. And then we got listed on NASDAQ, and now with the Trump administration being pro-Bitcoin, we have moved the head office from Canada to San Antonio, Texas. And so we were very caught up with these safe jurisdictions. We're green only. So I've been learning on this learning curve of having a crypto mining company and being a first mover advantage. We're the first to do balancing the grid. We've been doing that for a long time in Sweden. We're the first to recycle the energy that we, in Montreal, we have 30 megawatts and we mine Bitcoin, and then we recycle the heat over 25 yards away into a building five times greater with 175 pool manufacturer people working manufacturing whirlpools. So that electron hydroelectricity gets recycled and recycled. So we're innovators, and I love being in that end of learning about it. Well, in that journey, blockchain was invented in 91. What it did basically lay dormant. Then the internet's being released. Out comes Napster, peer-to-peer. That was very key for the concept of Bitcoin being decentralized. But what it needed after BitGold had come out as a smart contract, but it still really didn't get the traction, it needed to have encryption. And the encryption came from the U.S. government. DARPA, I believe, was or the U.S. government Defense Department had created SHA-256, which is the encryption for facial recognition on our iPhones. That was released, and there was no backdoor on the original SHA-256 facial algorithm. Well, that is the dome, the protection around a Bitcoin. So you have blockchain, then we see peer-to-peer by Napster, and then we see SHA-256 encryption software basically as a dome over to protect. We don't know where it's going to evolve. I believe I agree with Michael Saylor, layer two is going to evolve. That's going to become significant on this adoption process. Each step along the way creates a sort of a quantum leap because of Metcalfe's law.
Now, that's awesome. I love the Napster breakdown, too. So for a lot of people that don't know, yeah, I mean, you know, you would have Napster, LimeWire, those other music places. And then when you ever heard the DJs intro those songs, it would take like 20 or 30 seconds before you get to the actual song. So obviously, there's been some innovations with that. But do you think we've even touched the tip of the iceberg when it comes to innovating in Bitcoin? Because you listed off a bunch of different things, whether it's, you know, through mining or through layer twos. Like, do you think we've even got close to where we'll see Bitcoin in 5 years?
I think it's huge. Having over 20,000 decentralized nodes all over the world working 24/7. Oh, I think it's incredible. And what happened with the creation of ordinals? All of a sudden, there was a spike on for miners, that revenue they were making. When I was recently in Barcelona, it was amazing to see that when you use your credit card, it was a minimum 3% fee. And if you wanted to get dollars, there was a 12% commission. Well, you can use Bitcoin and you don't have that commission. It's basis points. It's not 12 plus 3, 15% gouge on your money. I think that what people have to recognize is something that's happened outside of just the Bitcoin has been Tether. America is very, very vocal in the Bitcoin ecosystem regarding poor spending by governments and holding government agencies and government politicians accountable and more responsible for the spiraling debt. That's all great, but it's very critical. Outside of America, everyone wants US dollars. And that wake-up call for me was last year when I went to the Tether conference in Lugano, and it was Plan B, and they had $135 billion, and they make more money than BlackRock with $11 trillion. They're doing $100 million in revenue per employee. Like, no other company in the world does that. And you say, well, why? And they have 300 million accounts, 300 million. Well, because outside of our beautiful country is other countries like Argentina in 2002 confiscated everyone's US dollar bank account to your $10,000. You got $3,000 worth of pesos. Today are worth $30. And the only reason why Buenos Aires is a beautiful city and the country functions has been $25 billion stuffed in mattresses and pillows. That's U.S. dollars is keeping the economy going. Banks can come in by government actions and confiscate your U.S. dollars. Well, guess what? Argentines, Brazilians, all these countries, any young kid that understands gaming and technology, they have their money and they want it in Tether, which is basically a non-interest paying money market fund. Basically what it is, you don't get the interest. Tether gets to keep it. That's why it makes them so wealthy. But they are on the hand of Bitcoin mining, and they've got, I think they said something like 42,000 Bitcoin and 52 tons of gold. They also found around the world that people want to have gold and US dollars and Bitcoin. So there's something bigger that's happening outside of our ecosystem. And every year I go to Harvard. And then at Harvard, I'm with 150 CEOs from 80 countries. And we get to play kids again. And we have to do 60 hours of reading cases, and we have to then have 60 hours of class and meeting rooms. And we live in a dorm. It's a phenomenal experience. In 2018, I announced that I started the first crypto mining company, and they all booed me. Are you crazy? Are you nuts? Today, what do you think is the next hot coin? I mean, it's amazing to see. And the curriculum used to be like 5% to 8% digital transformation. It's now 70%. They found that all the businesses that went through the digital transformation before COVID actually exploded, like Domino's Pizza hires a new CEO from Bain & Company, sees all this data, digitizes it all, starts writing AI and analyzing it all. And that stock goes up 500% because he's gone through the digital transformation. And so now we're gonna see more and more businesses go with the adoption of Bitcoin as a commerce. And yesterday I was at a meeting with at the San Antonio Zoo. And they just now adopted Bitcoin. So they will take donations for their 501c. I think that's really cutting edge what's going to happen. And so all of a sudden, those are Bitcoin, and predominantly at the beginning was young technologists. Something else, Brandon, and I learned, and you were probably one of those young guys, gamers. So in that journey of understanding the adoption was gamers, and gamers that today are 22, were 12 years old, and they were mining Ethereum when they went to bed. They took those GPU chips, and the numbers went up to 30 million kids were mining Ethereum around the world. And it was the worst thing ever for Ethereum to go from proof of work to proof of stake. They lost a huge part of their ecosystem. But those kids, they couldn't open a bank account. They couldn't open a brokerage account. But they figured out how to open an exchange account and convert their Ethereum. They're earning 1 to 2 Ethereum coins a year. They could convert it to a currency and then turn around to upgrade and buy a new GPU chip for their gaming. It was incredible to hear the story over and over. And now those young gamers in America, a lot of them voted for Trump. That was a big part of the swing. And you just don't realize around the world the influence of gamers. Well, Robinhood, when they first started opening an account on Robinhood, they had the gaming. They gave you 3 choices, A, B, or C, and you got 1 share of a stock under $5. That idea of winning something is gaming. Well, what built an NVIDIA, their GPU chip originally, was not before AI took off. It was really the gamers. So the gamers are now in their 20s and 30s. They have much more technological savviness, and the adoption process is only going to grow. And there's going to be a transfer of wealth from my age and your parents to you and to my kids that are going to be much more crypto Bitcoin savvy. And we're talking about trillions of dollars of wealth transfer is going to happen over the next 20 years. So I think Bitcoin goes much higher.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I think that wealth transfer is always going to go down to the Bitcoin space. I mean, if you look at the M2 money supply, it seems like anytime more money gets dumped into the system, it gets dumped into Bitcoin as well. And funny thing is, I heard offhand, I don't know how true this is or what, this was secondhand, so it wasn't directly from Trump or Trump's people, but I heard that, you know, Trump understands that people in, you know, maybe a little bit older generations, not quite as old as you there, Frank. I know you're a young buck. You were telling me you run quite a bit, but he looks at the S&P 500 as how people view the economy, how it's going. And Trump understands that, you know, maybe the millennials and younger, they look at the price of Bitcoin as looking at how good the economy is doing. So I think that that's going to be the shift. It seems like Trump has kind of recognized that, and there's going to be this push and this movement towards innovation because people simply want it. Like you said, I think it's interesting that you have kind of that you're understanding and seeing all of this innovation going on. And part of that is, you know, you started this Bitcoin mining company, you know, early on. You're the first publicly traded Bitcoin miner. So, you know, with that, tell us how that experience went when you were, you know, essentially innovating a new company and kind of bringing it to Publix, and you're interacting with all these other CEOs. Why do you think there was so much, I guess, disdain towards it originally?
Because I think the bank lobbying groups control the narrative. I think that if you look at Choke Point 1.0 under President Obama, in the list of industries that he wanted to go after, was really a lot of that was written by bank lobbying group. They went after independent ATMs. Well, at that time, there was independent ATM Bitcoin machines. So it got pulled into that dragnet, along with pole dancers, along with pawn shops and pay loan stores. And it was interesting to see, but a lot of that came from the banking industry. So I if you look at Canada, where HIVE was fortunate to be able to be launched, I knew well the junior gold mining business. I'm well known for it. I wrote books on it. And I understood that process. So it made it easier for me to see this is very fundable in Canada. And I share with you is that Fidelity was an unbelievable sponsor. They gave us $100 million. And then other small cap fund managers gave us another $100 million to really get HIVE cranking out in our journey. But I think the other part was just the continuous learning. It's really, to me, fascinating. And for me to go back and share with you and your listeners, common law. What we don't realize, and I didn't realize at the time, the profoundness and the significance of common law. And common law created out of King John the First in England in 1215, I think it was. It was the first creation of separation that people think of church and state. No, really, it was about private property rights. It was all about private property rights, and human rights only came with private property rights. And every country that has come in and played with private property rights has destroyed human rights. Chavez did it in Venezuela, right in front of our eyes. It's just recognizing that. So what does common law do? Well, America's about common law, Canada's common law, the UK. We adopt the slight variances, but common law allowed for the first patents. The idea of an intangible idea like Bitcoin, and that this is my property. Your song is your property. Your poem is your property. America as a whole, as a country around the world, really believed the strongest. And I think President Trump recognized from the second journey that Bitcoin is all about private property rights. And we saw what happened in and we mentioned earlier, but Argentina in 2002, they come in and they took away your bank account and they took away your private property rights. They usurped your cash. They destroyed your cash. And that's why you have to have something outside of it. Gold bugs are very much the same way. They believe in gold is decentralized and they believe that this is my property and it's portable. It's not as, it's prettier to wear, but it is not as easy to move around the world or from this place to that place. So it has its other strengths and weaknesses, but still there's similarities that it's private property and it's portable.
Yeah, and I think that is part of the big innovation here. So do you think that people still look at Bitcoin similarly to a digital gold, or do you think we're going to, do you see the adoption, I guess, going towards more of the peer-to-peer cash? Because you lined out Tether, right? Tether's unique. It's the most profitable business in the world, I think. And, you know, they're a vast holder of U.S. government bonds and other things as well on top of Bitcoin. And I want to get into your view on holding Bitcoin on the balance sheet in a minute. But, you know, firstly, do you think that, you know, we're going to get to that peer-to-peer electronic cash first? Or do you think it's going to take some time for us to get there where it's going to be, oh, this is, you know, 10,000 sats opposed to, you know, this is $10, but you can pay in Bitcoin?
I think it'll evolve faster that as layer two evolves and develops. I think that's a key part of it. Layer two is growing and is being well funded. So I think that that's going to be key. Like I said earlier, someone's going to come along with something else using Satoshis like Ordinals did. There's going to be something else that's going to say there's incredible value of attaching something that can go all around the world. It doesn't have to get on a cargo ship. It doesn't have to wait to go from 8 weeks or on an airplane. It's immediately transferable. And I think that that's what's going to happen. And think when of all of a sudden you can put properties on Bitcoin and on that network, and you can say that this is, gives you the deed to this property, and I'm going to sell it to you, and you're living in England, and you just bought this property in Austin. The transaction can all be done digital, and they can see the pictures that's digital. I think this is, this technology is going to evolve, and the Bitcoin network is going to grow. And I remain very bullish regarding this whole concept. But coming back is really important, is private property rights and human rights. They're so well connected. And we get a lot of people talk about human rights, human rights, human rights. And they want to take away private property rights of businesses, individuals, and corporations. The far left always has this agenda that's humanitarian to such a degree that they take away private property rights always. Always, their human rights will be taken away. They are connected at the hip.
Yeah, and I agree with you 100%. And, you know, I think that that's going to be a growing, you know, aspect of things. And I think, you know, we're seeing the Trump administration and others kind of realize that it's, hey, it's Bitcoin, not crypto. This is a digitally scarce asset. You know, we want to let people transact freely and everything like that. So I'm confident that we'll see some sort of positive things in this next 2 years. But I'm also, you know, wary. I don't necessarily trust politicians with everything going on. But, you know, you talked about Tether earlier and how they hold Bitcoin on the balance sheet, amongst a few other things. I want to get your viewpoint on holding Bitcoin on the balance sheet, because I know Hive is, you know, one of the leaders in the Bitcoin mining space who also holds Bitcoin on the balance sheet. Now, what we saw last cycle was a lot of Bitcoin miners hold Bitcoin on the balance sheet. I'm always a little wary of that because, you know, with the mining and the massive amounts of leverage, you know, you can get yourself into trouble if you're not smart. So how do you kind of balance that risk and reward ratio when you're, you know, mining Bitcoin right now and wanting to hold Bitcoin on the balance sheet, you know, opposed to just holding that cash, which you know is going to essentially fade away?
I think one of the big parts is, and when you look at a capital structure of a company, I'm very proud of the team, Brandon. We've never had any of these financial problems like many of the other crypto mining companies have had. And a couple have gone through bankruptcy and successfully come out of them, in particular Core Scientific. But it's for us, we've not done that leverage against our coins, leverage against very expensive 14%, 16% cost of capital to go and do a borrow. We've not done that. And we've been very cautious regarding that process. So even during the worst of times from Celsius, that proof of work to proof of stake by Ethereum and then FTX all happened in 6 months, we still had operating income. We still made money. Bitcoin got crushed, came back, and we continued to weather through those storms. So we weathered through halvings, and I think it's just regarding our philosophy that every dollar is a prisoner. We'd rather have Bitcoin on our balance sheet than cash, but we know we need to have cash to pay for a lot of things. But for us, it was so good having a huge stash of Bitcoin. When Bitfarms opportunity came up in Paraguay, they want to go. So we used some of our Bitcoin. We sold some to at 103,000 to be able to put down the money to say we're going to buy it. And now we're going to become the biggest player in Paraguay. And why is that Paraguay important for Hive? Green energy. Our strategy and philosophy, Brandon, has always been green. It's been a challenge because it's hard to find sources of stable green energy. And so with that, we found that Intel reached out to us, and because we're green, and we created the first Buzz miner with Intel. And then we were able to get NVIDIA chips that allowed us to go into AI and mine Ethereum before Ethereum moved over to proof of stake. And so why the thought process of staying green, we've had a challenge of getting size, like something that gives you scale where you can scale what we're doing. So right now we're having triplets. We're going to go from 110, 20 million in revenue to about 500 million over the next 9 months. And that comes from the opportunity of Paraguay. But this time last year, I flew down to Paraguay to meet with the president before going into the country. And what we look at and going into the country is that we are basically a currency hedge for them. They had been using electricity, they have a surplus, selling to Argentina that wasn't paying. No pay or slow pay. They owe them $200 million. Now, Milei has given them $100 million since he's become the president. But it's, you know, interesting. They can't. They want to be able to have more energy to develop their economy. They're very pro-America. That's something else that really impressed me. Out of all the Latin countries, now Argentina under Milei is much more pro-America. But Paraguay's always been pro-America, and so that was very, very comforting. You see their biggest exports to Taiwan, food and agriculture. They have this massive dam that is almost 5 miles in length, the biggest hydro dam in Western Hemisphere, 50-50 with Brazil. If they don't use the energy, Brazil gets it, but they have the right to 50%. So what's going to help develop all of their power systems and substations we have to go build, et cetera, is going to be Bitcoin miners. And then we're going to turn around. They're going to get paid every month. They're going to get U.S. dollars. And slowly all the Latin currencies are going down relative to the U.S. dollar. It's an incredible hedge that their bank, central bank, couldn't put on. They don't have the capital. So it's a win-win. It's a win for the government. It's a win for them running their government and having a great economy. And it's a win for Hive having hydroelectricity energy and being part of that. So we think that, you know, we're going to get up to 300 megawatts, and then we're going to go to 500, then maybe 1,000. And that's the potential with a win-win with a government like Paraguay. And the president of the country was also at the inauguration of Trump, along with Milei from Argentina.
Yeah, and it seems like that's going to be, you know, kind of the movement here is we're going to see a lot of Latin American countries start to get into Bitcoin because it seems like that area is really ripe for, you know, development. They have a lot of natural energy resources and a lot of natural energy potential there. So, you know, with that, obviously you guys expanded into Paraguay. Do any, I guess, like conflicts or anything, like, do you vet these countries pretty carefully to try to avoid any potential geopolitical risk before, you know, obviously making a huge investment and bringing a plant down there?
Yeah, it's ongoing. I think with the Trump administration, things like this will be even safer. We experienced this in Iceland. We experienced this in Quebec. New Brunswick has been pretty stable, except for their energy, their infrastructure, how they run it. Sweden has been a challenge with the tax authorities, and the governments thought that they double the tax of on all energy in the country against all data centers. That stifled their growth, except for Microsoft going into Sweden, but that's for the government. They're building a big data center. But you're seeing that other countries like Finland are sort of seen to be attracting Bitcoin miners. But I think the positive note was taking place in Washington, D.C., will have positive ramifications around the world. The more that a country is common law, we talked about earlier, the more quick they are going to be able to adopt to the concept of it. The more strict and authoritarian and civil law, the slower they're going to be on the adoption process. That's basically the way I look at that geopolitics. Unless there's a very strong relationship and alliance with America. And so that's what we look at for other countries, that where are they? I think Canada is in a spat right now with tariffs. I think Trump made a big mistake because Canada has fought shoulder to shoulder. Did you know that more Canadians, young men, came down to America and enlisted and went to Vietnam than there were draft dodgers that went to Canada? And loyalty. It's unbelievable. From World War II, Korea, Afghanistan, Iraq has been. So there's a loyalty besides trading partner. And to dismiss them like they're nobody, I think that if he did that to the state of Texas would be even more bellicose. And so it's been a positive for Canada. It's been it's united the country. But I think that they have surplus electricity. And I think what they could easily do is say, you know what, we're not going to sell electricity to New York State, Michigan, and Wisconsin. We're going to keep it all, and we're going to make Canada the data center capital of the world. Now, these are things that can easily happen. So we have to just be aware that on one hand, it's a good policy for crypto. On the other hand, what these tariff wars have, it just makes, I always try to apply game theory thinking. Is it asymmetrical? Is it a zero-sum decision? Is it where there's long-term versus short-term? There are models you can apply to look at this. And I really hope that the policies coming out are not zero-sum thinking. I hope that they think 1 and 1 is 11, because that's why I look at Bitcoin. 1 and 1 is 11. It's not linear, it's exponential. And that's what makes it so exciting.
So do you think game theory is starting to play out here with Bitcoin?
Yes, I do. And I think that the expansion where it's asymmetrical. So as more countries adopt and say, look, we should have accept it for our citizens, then I think you could see this pop where we go in this cycle the next 4 years. Well, it's actually 3 years now since that happened, was a year ago. Where it goes to $1 million.
There we go, man. Well, I love to hear that. It gets me all fired up how bullish you are, Frank, especially with your vast amount of experience. But I think we're running a little bit out of time here. So why don't you tell people where they could find out? Yeah, why don't you tell people where we can find out more about Hive and more about you, Frank? We're going to have you back on. I'm going to have to tell everybody a little bit about what we learned about your pre-show. He's still running, folks. I mean, look at this guy. He looks great. He's running. He'll be running this Hive company for quite some time.
I'm tell very us a little blessed. Bit about I you. Turned 70 last week, and I can still run. And you're a runner, Brendan. So next time we have to go for one of these conferences, like in Miami, go for a run together.
Yes, let's do it. I don't want you to embarrass me in front of my friends, though, Frank. You got to take it.
No. I will never embarrass you. You're a young whippersnapper. You ran track in college. That's very, very impressive.
Well, thank you.
Very, very impressive. I know how hard it is in the state of Texas, the Texas A&M to run. Oh, Memphis. It's wonderful to be able to. And you're a mechanical engineer, too, and biochemistry. See your journey. I was originally in medicine and then pivot over to going to money management and then launch the first crypto mining company. It's all a beautiful journey.
Yeah. Bitcoin takes you in places you never really thought you'd end up. And I mean, to be honest with you, a couple of years ago, if you would have told me I'm interviewing, the first publicly traded Bitcoin miner CEO here today while sitting in, sitting in Austin, getting ready to attend a Bitcoin event at South by Southwest, I would have told you you're absolutely insane. So it takes you to some interesting places. You never know where life's going to take you. And I'm sure you can relate to that there, Frank.
So just go to Hive Technology. We have rich content on YouTube. We publish a lot of educational material. And so that's probably in Twitter too. Every day we're out there on information we think is relevant for investors. And educational in particular, we're really caught up. And my fund business is usfunds.com. That's really easy. And I publish every Friday the investor alert that goes out to, I think it's like 80 countries, 100,000 readers. And it's a SWOT analysis of different asset classes, and crypto and Bitcoin gets SWOTed every week, looking at last week's strengths and weaknesses and what economic data points are coming out next week, which could be an opportunity or a threat to Bitcoin. So we publish this every Friday night.
There we go. And that'll be coming out tonight. But by the time you guys listen to this, there'll be a few that are out there. So I'll put all that in the show notes. Make sure you hit the like, the subscribe button, tell a friend to tell a friend, give it a 5-star rating, and go look up Frank and Hive Technologies, because Frank's got a very interesting background and they're doing some great things. So Frank, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you. And have a wonderful weekend.